the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six attractions we miss from the Magic Kingdom. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 64 of the World of Walt podcast, Make the Most of Your Walt Disney World Vacation, for the week of March 20th, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today, our podcast is sponsored by Ear to There Travel. If you're planning a trip to anywhere Disney is, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member and he knows how Disney works. He can help you with all the details of your trip at no extra cost to you while making sure you get the best possible deal. You can reach Phil at www.eartotheirtravel.com. Many years have passed since the Magic Kingdom opened way back in 1971, and in those years, Disney has closed some very popular attractions in the park. I always enjoy the new things that Disney brings, and sometimes you have to move out the old to bring in the new. Still, being something of a Disney traditionalist, I do miss some of the attractions that are no longer with us. So today, we're going to take a look at the top six attractions we miss from the Magic Kingdom. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a former Disney cast member and a literal fountain of Disney knowledge, Aaron Cohen. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I don't know about literal fountain. That would mean I'm spraying water everywhere.
But, oh, yeah.
you know what? That's fine. You know, I was going to ask, you know, which fountain we're talking. Is it like the Fountain of Nations over at Epcot? Is it, you know, one of the fountains over Magic Kingdom? I mean, which one, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, well, it could really be any of them, I guess. But maybe we'll go with the Fountain of Nations at Epcot because it is one of the most impressive.
That's true. It's. I mean, anything at Epcot makes me happy. So we'll go with that one.
All right, good. So before we get into the topic for today, we have our warm-up question for you, which is, what is your favorite shop in Main Street, USA?
You know, I think I'm going to have to say the Emporium for that one. And that's primarily just because it has kind of a little bit of everything in it. You know, it's just... It's a great one stop to get last minute souvenirs, to get, you know, gifts for people, to get kind of whatever you need, either at the start of your visit or at the end, kind of like if you're walking out at the end of the night and you want to get some last minute things. I think it's got a really good mix of stuff kind of across the board. And I say that because at least at Walt Disney World in Florida, the Magic Shop is long gone. And it was replaced with a sports shop, so I can't say the Magic Shop, so I'm going to have to go with the Emporium.
Rest in peace, Main Street USA Magic Shop, yes. I would probably vote with you on this one as well. I think the Emporium, much like the World of Disney over at Disney Springs, is one of those places that kind of has a huge selection of options, a lot of choices. It's one of the highlights of an exit of the Magic Kingdom. And plus, it does give you a way to scoot around all of the traffic on Main Street USA, enjoy a little bit of air conditioning if you were there on a hot day, which is most days.
Yes, true.
All right, good. Top six attractions we miss from the Magic Kingdom. So, Aaron, to you, number one.
So my first one was around in 1971, ran until 1994, actually. And that is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I grew up going on this one, getting into the Nautilus subs and feeling like you're going underwater and seeing all the sea life and, of course, the giant squid at the end. It was really exciting. It was a classic, you know. It really just, especially as a kid, you know, as a little kid, I had no idea we weren't really going underwater. And for those of you that have been on the ride and didn't know that, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, no pun intended. But, you know, it makes you feel like you're going underwater deeper and deeper. And as a kid, especially sitting there looking at the little portholes, that was amazing. I mean, that blew my mind that this was happening. And then even as I got older and started to understand, you know, the theatrical tricks behind the magic, you know, then I was impressed with it on a whole new level because they could pull that off so effectively. But the reality is, you know, I actually went as a Disneyland not too terribly long ago, and they've got the Finding Nemo's Submarine Adventure, which is a similar attraction where you get in the sub and you go around, and it looks like you're going underwater, and you look out the portal and all that. And wow, the throughput on that ride was terrible. You know, and I'd forgotten how bad it was until I actually kind of went on a different version of it recently, where, you know, you can fit maybe 30 people in these subs. It's like that one narrow kind of gangplank to get into the sub, and you go down those spiral stairs, and you're sitting there like in these tight little cramped quarters, look out this little window. And, you know, as someone who can appreciate the strides Disney has made in making things so much more accessible and so much more fun and kind of easier to get on and off of and easier to enjoy, you know, I can definitely understand why it had to go. But at the same time, it was such a great experience and such a part of my like childhood Walt Disney World memories that's up there for me.
I agree. I always loved 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea as a kid. So not only did you get to step into the movie, but you got to go on a submarine or something that was very similar to a submarine. And where other place could you do that? It was just amazing to have a chance to do it, even though a lot of it was sort of simulated. And I also remember the musty smell of the subs and sort of the little splashes of water and the tight quarters and having your own little viewport to look out. And I do understand, just as you said, why Disney had to do this. I'm sure there were a lot of issues with accessibility, with maintenance, with throughput. But 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was a very special attraction. I think it's one that a lot of folks miss.
Yeah, and I love the movie. It's one of my favorites. But, you know, I have to wonder how many kids have seen the movie in the past probably 20 years. You know, which is sad. I think everybody should see it. It's a great part of, like, Disney cinematic history. And I'd wonder if the ride was still there, if people would, you know, go on the ride and then see the movie. But I just think I think it's not relevant to this generation of Walt Disney World guests.
Yep, I think you're probably right. We miss you, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but we understand why you had to go.
Right.
Okay, number two is over to me. I am going to stay in Fantasyland in the Magic Kingdom and go to an opening day attraction, which was the Mickey Mouse Revue. The Mickey Mouse Revue was in place from opening day until 1980, when it was relocated to Tokyo Disneyland. I think it's very interesting that it went to Tokyo. I know they had to fill up that park, but I've been reading recently about some points of Japanese culture, and there's sort of a tradition of cuteness in Japan, and I think the Mickey Mouse Revue fits very nicely into the cute category. It hasn't been around in a long time, so fortunately there are one or two YouTube videos out there you can check out regarding the Mickey Mouse Revue. A lot of the show is carried by music, so there are a lot of audio animatronic characters, but they don't move a lot. This was created way back in, you know, probably the late 60s, so the technology isn't too cutting edge, but I think the music carried the attraction. So dozens of Disney characters are involved in playing instruments. So Minnie Mouse plays the violin, and Huey, Dewey, and Louie play the trumpets. And of course, Mickey Mouse conducts it all. There are a number of scenes brought in from classic Disney movies, like you see a scene with Snow White and the song I'm Wishing. The fairy godmother from Cinderella makes an appearance. And towards the end of the show, all of the characters come out for the grand finale, where everyone sings Zippity-Doo-Dah. And then as a final reprise, we hear the MICKEYMOUSE song, and it wraps up the show. So it was a show for a simpler time. It wasn't very high tech, but with the music, I think the music really, really hit home the emotional connection of the show. And it was a show that made a big impression on me when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's one that I don't remember too well. I mean, I'm sure I've seen it 100 times. But it's not one that stuck in my memory as much as some of the other ones. But I will say that it is one that I feel does have a spiritual successor in the parks, and that would be with PhilharMagic, where you've got kind of a similar type of thing. We've got the actual classic Disney characters playing music and going through the different movies and stuff like that. So it's one that its soul still carries on in a different version. But like you said, that type of, you know, simple attraction is from a time that just, you know, sadly is gone.
Yeah, you're right. And good point that those two attractions occupy the very same building in the same spot. So it is interesting to see how that concept carried on in the very same place. I've heard stories that part of the issue with that space, whether it was with Mickey Mouse Revue or Mickey's PhilharMagic, is that the place where you queue up before you go into the theater wasn't probably sized quite right. So the theaters usually aren't full because of how the different areas just don't flow together the way they really should. Still, you normally don't have to wait for Mickey's PhilharMagic very long. And it's a fun show, and one that still carries on a tradition of sharing Disney music with classic Disney characters.
Yeah, it's a very different, you know, you've got the 3D effects, and you've got, you know, it's very different than the kind of classic animatronics and stuff like that. So it's you know, a modern version, I suppose.
Yep, very good point. Okay, that was number two. So number three, Aaron, back to you.
So for my third one, like I said, I recently, well, last year, went to Disneyland for my first time. I've been to World so many times, and it was my first time at Land. And one of the things about Disneyland is that there's still some attractions there that used to be at World and are gone, just with World's changeover over the years. And one of those is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And I used to love this ride as a kid. I mean, you know, you're getting in the car and you're going around and, you know, it looks like you're about to crash into the wall and the wall opens or something. You turn 90 degrees and you avoid the wall and there's all these crazy characters. And, you know, I would sit there and I would spin that wheel, which isn't attached to anything, but it made me feel like I was driving when I'm, you know, 7 years old and I'm way too young to drive a car.
Yep.
But I'm, you know, I'm spinning the wheel and, you know, and as I got to know the ride better, I would pretend to steer, and I would be like turning the wheel in the direction that the car was going to go to make it seem like I was really turning the car. And, you know, I used to love this ride, and it was so just goofy and fun. And this one was an opening day ride, and it ran until 1998 before it shut down permanently to make way for the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Now, this one is still at Disneyland, and I rode it a couple of times when I was there, you know, in part just it's fun, in part nostalgia. And I don't know if I appreciated when I was a kid just how weird that ride really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one minute you're you know, dodging police officers who are trying to stop your car, and the next moment you're you know, in hell and there's devils and stuff. And, you know, it's just, it really, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the animated movie except for the characters and maybe a couple of minor scenes. And it's just, it's bizarre, but it's a lot of fun, and it is one that I had missed, and I don't think I realized how much I missed it until I got to ride it at Disneyland again, and then kind of realize how much I loved that one growing up.
I think your word choice is spot on. That was a bizarre attraction. I can't imagine too many theme park attractions that include going to hell as part of the experience. And it's also one where the characters there are not nearly as well known as its replacement, which, as you mentioned, was Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. But there was something about Mr. Toad's Wild Ride that really struck a chord with people, and they miss it. And I think a lot of it is nostalgia. It certainly wasn't technology, because that ride, most of the characters seemed like they were painted on flat plywood. So it wasn't like there was a lot going on from a technology perspective, but there was something that really made a connection for folks.
Yeah, you know, and I think it was in a way, you know, I mean, yes, it was a slow, dark ride, but part of it was the, it's like a kid's version of a thrill ride, you know, because like I said, you're suddenly, you know, you're going straight towards the wall, and then suddenly, like, the last second the wall opens, or, you know, you're going right towards a character, and then, like, right before you hit, the car suddenly veers to the left, and you avoid. And, you know, especially when you're a little kid and you're not really familiar with the ride, that's kind of exciting, you know?
Yeah.
So it's one that I definitely was glad to ride again. And if you're a Walt Disney World fan and frequent guest, and you get the chance to go to Disneyland, you'll get to ride it again. And I think you'll feel the same way, where that burst of nostalgia is right there for you.
Yep, good one. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Okay, number four is back over to me. I'm going to go to Tomorrowland in the Magic Kingdom, one of the opening day attractions, and one of only two attractions in Tomorrowland that were there on opening day. The other attraction I'm not going to mention is the Speedway because it's still in operation. But the one I am going to mention is the Skyway. So the Skyway operated from opening day in 71 until 1999. It allowed you to take some buckets on a cable from Tomorrowland over to the far side of Fantasyland. And this was a very standard, I think I can even use the word ride. So many different amusement parks and theme parks had this sort of a ride. It's a way to get you from point A to point B. But the thing I think that was really appealing about the Skyway is that you got a very special perspective of the Magic Kingdom. And yes, a lot of it was the rooftops, but still you could get a lay of the land and you could see what was going on in the Magic Kingdom. And maybe it saved a few steps along the way if you were trying to get to the far side of the park. Skyway 71 to 99, it's one I miss, but I do understand why Disney probably took this out. I've got to imagine there were some potential safety issues with it, some throughput issues with it, but it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, you know, this one's interesting because I remember when I was really little not wanting to go on it because of the height things. Of course, you're going up, you know, over the buildings and just kind of being afraid to go on it. It's not like it was fast. It was actually super slow. But it was also open, like you sat in the car and then there was like kind of the roof. And then, of course, over that, there was what attached you to the cable. But there was no like netting or mesh or like that to, you know, between the tops of the car, you know, the vehicle, to that roof. It was open. And you know, I think I was afraid of it when I was a little kid. And then at some point got over that and then loved it and just loved going up. And you get that kind of like, you know, bird's eye view of, you know, Fantasyland and stuff like that as you go over the park. And it was really cool. But it's definitely one that I had to warm up to and had to be a little bit older before I enjoyed.
I know what you mean. Even looking back now, I always think, I'm sure that the engineers have done a wonderful job of calculating all of this out. But that looks like such a tiny little cable holding up all of these cars. Is that really going to hold everything? And of course it does day after day and year after year. Something else I think was really great about the Skyway is that you had a very unique view down into 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So there's a way we can connect two of the items on our list together.
Yeah, true.
Okay. Number four, the Skyway. May you rest in peace. Number five, Aaron, we're back over to you.
So mine was another 1971 attraction. So, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was open 71, closed in 94. Mr. Toad was 71 through 98. This one was 71 and actually closed fairly recently, closed 2012. And that is Snow White's Scary Adventure. And this one closed and gave way to the Princess Fairy Tale Hall, which is a meet and greet with the princess characters, which, you know, not my thing. I don't have a young child who'd be into that. And I'm not, you know, super into meet and greets, depending on the characters. But given the lines for this, you know, for Princess Fairy Tale Hall day in and day out, obviously it was a good choice for Disney purposes. But Snow White's Scary Adventure was a fun ride. It was, you know, obviously based on Snow White and, you know, it was kind of cool that it was based on a classic movie like that. It was a dark ride. And it was a dark, dark ride. I mean, it was like, right in the name, it was scary. And I wouldn't say scary like a, you know, things jumping out at you and really, you know, oh my God, people screaming. It was definitely like a Disney version of scary. But you had the witch and you had, you know, these kind of like dark scenes. They did lighten it up a bit midway through its lifespan. I think in the mid-90s, they went from this, you know, a lot of the witch, not a lot of the dwarves, a much darker experience than the later version. This is another one that is still at Disneyland, so I got to ride and kind of realize that I missed. And this one I missed just because it's a classic Disney experience. It's, you know, not even that I'm super into the ride like Mr. Toad or anything like that. It's just that, you know, it's based on a classic, classic characters. It is a, you know, classic. You've got that kind of like cruder animatronic figures. A lot of tricks with black light, a lot of tricks with, you know, layered plywood, like, you know, painted plywood, and stuff like that. But it's just something about it. It's just this classic Disney experience, and I miss that. And I feel that it's something that the park is in a way getting away from, and that's not a bad thing. Obviously, they're going with what the modern guest wants to see. But for those of us that have been there really more or less from the beginning or close to it, you know, it's you know, that type of experience, something you don't really see a lot of anymore, and I miss that.
Mm-hmm. I think you hit on a bunch of great points. I agree that there was a lot of nostalgia value in Snow White's Scary Adventure as an opening day attraction. It's one that many of us remember from our childhood or many visits gone by. But I do think you're right. We can see, based on the lines in Princess Fairy Tale Hall, that Disney made a pretty good swap. They are giving people what they want. But still, we can miss what we don't have. And I do think that Snow White's Scary Adventure was a classic. And it's sad sometimes to see those classics go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, our last item, number 6, is over to me. And I think this is the only item on our list that was not an opening day attraction from 1971. I'm going back over to Tomorrowland, and I am going to the extraterrestrial alien encounter, an attraction opened from 1995 to 2003. It was always a unique placement, I think. So the story of Alien Encounter is that you're going to see a demonstration of some new technology. An alien corporation known as XS Tech has come up with a way to teleport people and things from one place to another. And the company's somewhat evil chairman, Elsie Clench, is ready to move this technology out. And so in the pre-show, you get a demonstration by Sir, the simulated intelligence robotics. And I always loved his speech and the way he would explain what was going on. And I always felt kind of bad for poor little Skippy. He would show you how the practically painless teleportation technology would work. And then you get into the main theater where you are in for a scary experience. And I think that's one of the things that eventually took Alien Encounter down. It didn't really seem to fit given its intensity in the Tomorrowland area or even in the Magic Kingdom. The attraction, much of it took place in the dark. There were scary moments. There were loud moments. The harness that comes over you would sort of bump into you in a scary way. And even the storyline itself, and I won't get into all the gory details, was sort of terrifying. This was truly a scary attraction, a scary show. And so I do understand why Disney decided to swap it out. I know lots of people have different feelings about its successor, which is Stitch's Great Escape. But the Alien Encounter, I think, was really a groundbreaking technology, a groundbreaking attraction for Disney. And I miss it. Even though it was scary and I'm not much of a scary guy, I think it was something special.
It was unique in a lot of ways. I think you hit a lot of the good points there of it. And one of the little known facts about it is that in its inception, it was actually at one point in its early designs, was actually supposed to be based on the Alien movie franchise, the one with Sigourney Weaver and those scary looking aliens. And that eventually fell through for whatever reasons. You can kind of still see that in its lifeblood in a lot of ways. And I wonder if it's something that might have done better at like Hollywood Studios, if it actually had gotten the movie license or something like that. But it was really cool because it was very different. And this one, like you said, opened in 95. So I was in college when it opened. I was actually working for the parks when it opened. So I was able to appreciate it. I think it was actually pretty cool. But I could see if you were there with a family with little kids and, you know, even though there were warning signs everywhere saying it was a scary ride, you know, you're thinking it's Disney and, oh, gee, it's not going to be that scary because it's Disney World. You're thinking like a Haunted Mansion kind of thing. And then you get in here and you've got that surround sound, you know, the sound right around your head. You've got the puffs of air on your back to simulate the alien breathing right behind you. And, you know, I think at one point, like, something hit the back of your neck to make it seem like the alien was, like, licking the back of your neck. And there was a lot of scary stuff happening. I think it was a little bit too intense for Tomorrowland and for Magic Kingdom. you know, and I applaud them for trying something and for going that direction and really trying something different. That was a really, really cool thing. But I really think it was just the lack of belonging there that killed it.
I think you're right. And I think you hit it right on the head. Even though there were all kinds of warning signs, this was not a scary like Snow White's Scary Adventure or a scary like The Haunted Mansion. This was a scary like terrifying sort of scary. And even for me as an adult, when the first time I went on it, I was kind of a freaky experience. Like I said, there was dark, it was loud. You didn't know what was coming at you. I heard at one point that Disney did some interesting things with low frequency vibrations to make just a really unique experience. And so I too am glad that they decided to push the envelope a little bit and try some new things, but it just didn't seem to fit.
Yeah, you know, and it's sad, but you know, when you've got people going there for a certain type of experience and then, you know, you throw this curve at them, you know, I guess it can be a bit much.
Yep, agree. Okay, this was a fun list. The top six attractions we miss from the Magic Kingdom. Number one, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Number two, the Mickey Mouse Review. Number three, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Number four, the Skyway. Number five, Snow White's Scary Adventure. And number six, Alien Encounter. So, Aaron, fun list. Thank you for going over it with me.
No, it was a lot of fun.
So if people are interested in finding out what you are up to, how can they do that?
Well, I write a blog called Magic and Misadventures. They can find that at magicandmisadventures.com. On there, I talk about a little bit of everything Disney-related, primarily focused on the parks, usually Disney World. I'm branching into Disneyland a little bit. And it can be anything from ranting about closed attractions to just thoughts on, you know, ideas that they should implement to do it yourself, to my own personal experiences. It's really all over the map. From there, they can check out I've got other social media outlets they can follow links to. They can check links to other podcasts, stuff like that, that I've been guests on. So a lot of different things happening.
MagicandMisadventures.com, one of my favorite sites. You do a great job with it, Aaron. And as always, you bring a lot to the podcast. So thank you again for joining me.
No, it's always a good time. Thank you for having me on.
Today we head out to the cue music from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And while we have made it through the list of the top six attractions we miss from the Magic Kingdom, our conversation isn't done yet. I'd love to hear what you think about our list. Do you have a different idea or something you'd like to add? You can do that by visiting the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/64. It's a page that works great on tablets, smartphones, and desktops. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people think as well. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch with me, and it's easy for you to get in touch with me too. Let me know what you think about today's show, or just stop by and say hi. Send me an email, info@worldofwalt.com. Leave a voicemail message at 407-391-5023. Leave an online voicemail message at worldofwalt.com/voicemail, and follow me on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt and pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your family and your friends about it. And to wrap up, I would like to give you a huge thank you for spending some of your time with me. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the forums and the comment sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is very cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.